This is René Aubergenois, Odo, on Deep Space Nine. And you, you lucky fools, are listening to Trekmate.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Trekmate podcast. Its continuing mission, to entertain, enlighten, educate, and talk all things Trek. To boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
Make it so.
Colonel Jack, all hands battle station.
Don't worry, we will get to the bottom of this.
All I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer by.
I don't want excuses, I want answers.
Am I authorized to enter the neutral zone?
How do you think that tells me about your character?
Captain's log, stardate 3541.9.
Program complete. Enter when ready.
Hello, and welcome to Trekmate. My name's Wayne Emery.
Hello, everybody. My name's Jude Hawkins, and it is good to be back again, a second week in a row.
Look at us.
Yeah. I hope everyone enjoyed our return and our return to behaving ourselves a bit more and keeping a bit more on track. I know that for the first time in a long time, I know some people might say, you sad git, but like I listened to the episode back and I enjoyed it. It would, you know, because a lot of the other ones, like we said last week, I don't think I want to listen back to myself from 8 months ago moaning about stuff. Reluctantly moaning, so to hear us being positive, I enjoyed that, and thank you for everyone who also wrote in to say so. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, no, it really does mean a lot. Yeah, so, thank you very much for Mike for mentioning that he was listening over on Twitter, and for Darren and Drew,
yeah,
messaging us on Facebook, letting us know that like your thoughts on what we was talking about and listening. And I really enjoyed podcasting again. It definitely feels like we're reinvigorated with our mojo back for it, so much so that Matt would be proud. I even edited the show properly as well. I didn't just put it out raw.
Yeah, you did a very good job, I'd say. If no one else says that, I'll say that. It's definitely noticeable and very well done, mate.
Thank you very much. It's most appreciated. Yeah, no, it's not too bad. It's about like a 3 to 4 hour process for editing like a show that ends up being about an hour long.
Mm. Oh, but you can tell, you know, if you're listening, you can tell the difference. I'm sure long-time listeners can tell the difference of all like those few years where you just stopped editing.
Yeah,
it's just you said to me, it's a lot of umming and ahhing and, you know, dead air sometimes, like unintentionally.
Well, that's the thing. I just feel invigorated to put my most into the show, and I hope that it comes across and people enjoy it, because I'm enjoying Star Trek again. So,
yeah, and it feels good. Feels good to be back.
Absolutely, because even like I know this episode we're going to be discussing the second episode in Strange New Worlds, which is Children of the Comet, and so we're going to be discussing that. But I did also watch another couple of episodes of Strange New World. So
I have not done that. I still didn't get past episode 6. I just had a lot going on this week. And yeah, I just thought, you know what? I'll just look forward to watching episode 2 again. Who knows? I may just be watching episode 7 with fresh eyes when we get to that in a month's time or whatever.
Well, I tell you what, the series doesn't let down. It doesn't let down. The couple more episodes that I've watched have been really good.
Yeah, as I'd said last week, once I got to episode 6, I was like, do you know what? I think I can relax now. I don't think that episode is going to come where I'm like, they ruined it! I knew they were going to do that. Like, I don't think it's coming.
No.
They seem to be a good collective team working on this show that know what they're doing.
They do, and they just get Trek, which is really refreshing. So it's nice for them to be on the same page as the fan base for once.
Yeah, there's more of that tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking forward to discussing the episode. Though I have to say, at the moment in our household, it's funny, we're on the build up to Christmas. So the wife and the kids were struggling with what to get. So they're like, can you put together a list of stuff? So I've been like going through Amazon and eBay and finding stuff. And I even put a couple of the new Trek Playmates lines on there, like the
all right,
like the TOS phaser is really quite impressive. I like that. So I've put a bunch of stuff like that and a couple of Star Trek bits on. And it's funny because as well as I put a couple of bits on for me Ghostbusters cosplay.
Oh yeah,
that one as well.
Very good.
And so I'm still putting that together. And my wife said Freya and Logan's reaction was, you know, with dads, shouldn't we be like buying them presents like drills or socks or something, not toys?
No. I still get criticized for that as well, not from my immediate family, but from my parents. Like, I can tell you this year, my parents, like, I love them so much, but they don't get the magic of Christmas so much these days. And like the surprise, like they just asked me, like, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
So this year, like they said, what do you want? And I said, well, when do you say what do you want? Do you mean what practical thing do I want? Because in years gone by, they've said, like, we're only getting you something sensible. We'll only get you, like what you just said, like a drill or, like, a head shaver or something, you know, like, whatever it is.
Do you need new gloves?
Yeah, exactly. We're only getting you that. And I just said to her this year, I said, is that what you mean? Like, what practical thing do I want? Or can I actually have what you would call toys this year?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh my god, you're still on that, you really want toys instead of... And I was just like, well, yeah, I would, please, if that's okay. Yeah. So I sent a link to the Back to the Future NECA figures.
What you've got to realize, mum, is he's fully articulated.
Yeah. And I was like, I know what you're gonna say this is ridiculously priced. And so I asked her to get me Griff.
Griff is on my list as well.
Yeah, he looks awesome. Well, from the pictures I've seen, I've not actually held him in the shop, but and I just put on there, you know, just like I would like 35 years ago, I just wrote, I really, really would really like this. And like about 35 minutes later, she just sent me a text saying, like, I got your bloody doll. I was just like, oh, thanks.
Yeah. It's an action figure, Mum.
Yeah, well, I actually managed to find, like, a meme, you know, just saying, like, it's not a doll! There was actually one on there already for me.
Yeah, that's the thing. We're not alone with that struggle.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, but, well, that's the thing. I just came up with a huge list of all different stuff. I'm like, okay, so then you can pick and it'll be a surprise what comes, because I'll be happy.
Oh, that's what I do. That's what I do for Sarah. Like, it's just endless things.
Yeah.
Endless Shenmue, Back to the Future, Star Trek, yeah, depending on what mood I'm in that year, you know.
Turtles, maybe.
Oh, Turtles, yeah, gets on there a lot. There's a lot of Turtles. There's a lot of Turtles on there every year for me.
Yeah. No, what, that's the thing. The NECA figures, I only need Marty in his radioactive suit, Doc in his radioactive suit, Doc in his 2015 gear, and Griff. So yeah, it's like any one of them, I'll be happy. So, but also, that's the thing. We don't spend too much, so I don't mind if that takes up most of my present. But then also, I'm like, okay.
It's a bloody good one to get, any of the NECA figures, I'd say, like for any of us geeks out there.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing, if money wasn't a problem, I would also love the Turtles that you've got, just because they look so cool.
They are great. Turtles ones are so good. I think in a way I could argue that they're the better than the Back to the Future ones, because of the, like, the color of their dark green skin and the fact that they're not human. Like, you don't notice the articulated bits so much, all the joints.
And also, because it's going from a, like, something that is a costume, or it's the same when they do stuff that's from animated shows, because it's not human, it's easier to replicate that face and everything to get it more spot on.
Yeah, I agree. I say that every time. like with this, I saw Discovery figures and like Saru, he looks great.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of hard to get him wrong. But with the others, you're just like, who's that? Who's that supposed to be?
Yeah, no, the new Playmates ones, because they've been a bit hit and miss. Like they've replicated the old style cards a little bit, which I really like. I've watched a couple of people do unboxings, and the heads on them, a couple of the heads look spot on, like really, really good. Like Spock looks really good, but then Kirk, he could be like any generic bloke on that head.
Maybe we could make this some sort of Christmas episode, like next month. We could like review some of the newer toys.
Definitely, because that's the thing. I still absolutely adore the original Playmates. I think they were so good.
Yeah, I love them too. I've started selling boxed ones that I had in the attic, but I'm going to keep all my loose ones, and I will endeavor to collect more at the conventions in future, but just loose.
Yeah, well, I think loose is fine because I want to hold them. I want to play with them. So
yeah,
and I think with the Playmates figures, what they done well is they weren't going for a lifelike look like you get with a NECA figures. They're almost like slight caricaturish of that. They get the key features. They get the key features of that person. So like you get the essence of that character.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Like they might not be 100%. Accurate like a NECA figure might be, but they embody that character perfectly.
Yeah, I think so. You can tell it is. Do you know what? I've just decided something.
What's that?
I've got some Playmates boxed figures in my living room, which I've got up on eBay right now for about £10 roughly each.
Oh yeah.
If they don't sell by our toy review episode next month, our Christmas special episode, I'll open them live on air.
Ooh.
Because I don't think I actually have them loose, so it just clicked in my head just then, fuck it, if I've not sold them, they're getting opened,
then they can go in the collection.
Yeah, so I think it's just the ones that a few that people don't seem to want as much, where it's Dr. Noonien Sung or whatever, and I think my Gowron in dress robes is gone. It's just normal Gowron. No, I think, have I got normal Gowron loose? I'll have to have a look and we'll work it out. I can't remember which one it is I got left. It's one of the Gowrons. And I think I might have... I've either got a Lore or a Data as some, you know, holodeck outfit, I think I might have left.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I can't say that I've ever actually opened one before. I've sort of opened ones where people have kept the box and they've carefully ripped it open and then they've put the figure back in.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just kind of lift it up and pull them out. But like, I don't think that really counts.
No.
I've never actually got a Star Trek Playmates thing and just gone, rip, yank, here we go. This is mine now properly.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So I've had a bunch of like in-box figures for years now. And like, I don't know. It's like, I've never lived in a big house. So what do I do with them? Where do I display them? I've done it in the past and they just kind of got in the way.
I do. Don't get me wrong. I love the boxes from the Playmates figures, and they look absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they look great. They're some of the coolest looking boxes.
But that's the thing, and you're right, space wise if you've got a lot of them, it takes a lot of space.
If I win the lottery, I will go back and collect them all, and then I will stick them on a wall in some special dedicated room.
You're not the only one. I would absolutely love to, I would love each a loose and a thing, because like you want to be holding the figures, you want to be grabbing them and pulling them about and playing with them. That's the thing. All of my NECA figures are open. The boxes are just tucked away at the moment.
I had some of the NECA ones in boxes for months and months and months, and eventually I just had to say, what am I doing? Just enjoy it. These are yours.
You want to play with it.
Yeah, of course you do. And some of them you want to change the head, where they have two heads and it's just like that second head has got like such a crazy fun expression on it. You're just like, I've got to put that one on.
I think it was Darren that sent the suggestion, make sure that you put hot water on it to loosen it up.
I was going to do it. And then I just took the risk with mine and it actually seemed to work fine. I just thought, I'm putting a certain amount of pressure and if it breaks, I'm going to cry, but I'll just give it a go. And I'll never do it again. But But I've been all right with mine.
I always panic after the wrist. I've not had any more damage since at the beginning, but I think I became a lot more wary at that point.
Mm.
Though Christmas-wise, I was quite happy. Leanne has got us the Back to the Future 3 advent calendar.
Yeah, same here. My wife's got me one as well, or me and Cisco one anyway.
I was like, do you want a big calendar as well? Is there something that you would like? Like maybe, I don't know, a makeup one, candles, something else. Like to her, she's like, no, I'm not a big kid like you. I was like, okay.
There is all sorts out then.
Oh, there is all sorts. But she's like, no, just chocolate is fine.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, then I'll have my £25 calendar while you've got your £3 one. It's okay.
Yeah.
But so I'm because then Playmobiles are so good. And I have to say, the Star Trek Playmobiles look amazing, but I cannot justify the price. Have you seen the price of the Playmobil?
Are they like based on TOS or on the TOS movies?
Yeah, because they've got the TOS Enterprise and also the Bird of Prey from Voyage Home.
I have seen it, and it's always been crazy, just completely unjustifiable.
It's like £250.
I had to say to Sarah, I was just like, don't get these. Don't think that you were ever like surprising me with like, oh, he's going to love this. Just don't. It's too much money.
Don't get me wrong. If there was ever a point that suddenly you saw it on sale for like £80, I could justify that. I'd be like, that is a good investment.
Yeah.
But £250 is a lot.
It is.
Despite how cool it looks, it really is a lot of money.
Oh, toys can be so pricey.
Yeah. Ridiculously. The only thing that I'd asked for that Leanne did take the piss out of me for was, I was like, okay then, so I need this for my Ghostbusters uniform, this for my Ghostbusters uniform, and this. And then she's like, okay, because there's the hose that connects to the leg.
Yeah.
There's like a piece of the hose that then connects to the belt from the leg. And she's like, you want me to get you a hose for Christmas? I was like, yeah, I do actually. She's like, can I just get some from the garden? I was like, no, it needs to be very specific hose.
Yeah.
She's like, you're fucking crazy. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what Christmas is all about.
What can I do?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wait until she gets a load of what's in that box that I've sent you. I'm not telling but when Leanne sees it, she's going to say, you're both sad bastards. But you're going to think it's awesome, and I think it's awesome.
Nice. That's the thing. I have had a feel.
I have not got a clue. No, you won't.
I have not got a clue whatsoever. It's like, it feels like there's a couple of straws in there. And I'm like, okay, I have no fucking clue whatsoever. I'm very, very intrigued.
Yeah, we'll set a date soon for a Christmas episode, and we'll open that and do some toy talk.
Yeah, no, well, I was inspired by there's a podcast I've been listening to a lot. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it in the last episode we discussed, but I've listened to a Games Master podcast.
Oh, wow!
Called Under Consultation, and it is brilliant. I absolutely love it because I used to love Games Master.
Same.
And they're literally going through from season one all the way through its entire run, and I've just finished season four, and I've been binging loads of it. And I don't know why I like these guys so much, Jude, because they love video games. They love wrestling.
Yeah,
they also love Star Trek. They love sci-fi, and also one of them is big into heavy metal.
Yep.
With long hair as well. I just don't know what it is about these guys that clicks.
Yep.
So much. And also, they're both huge Kevin Smith fans as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, I just, something about these
that is strange, yeah. Can't imagine why you'd like that.
No, it's not normally in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
But they, for one of their Christmas episodes, like they done for the year that they were reviewing, they got the Argos catalog like online for that year.
Oh wow. And I used to love that.
Same here. The amount of hours that I would go through the Argos catalog just flicking through.
Yeah.
And they went through and picked like, it was like a 3 or 5 things that they would want for themselves, and then 3 or 5 things that they would get for the other person.
Oh, that is a good idea. That might have to be stolen.
And I thought, I like that idea.
Maybe just pick a different year.
That's it. We'll pick a year from like the Trek Golden Age.
That would be good, yeah.
And see what's in there. It doesn't need to all be Trek stuff. There's plenty of other things in there.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun. Yeah, I think that might be, we might have just, might be the quickest pre-production planning we've ever done for a Christmas episode. Talk about the new toys. Pick each other pretend presents from an 80s Argos catalogue.
Yeah.
And you open that thing. That, yeah, do nicely, definitely.
I think we're on to a winner.
Yeah.
So,
can I just do one thing? I know we've done a ramble. We said last week we weren't going to ramble, but hopefully everyone doesn't mind that leading into Christmas. But I just thought I'd bring up one thing today, like at the beginning, and just tease it for the end of the episode, if we remember. I was just going to say, recently, this is like, I'm going to lay the seeds now, and I'll tell you about it later. I had a dream about a Trekmate host. And the dream involved this Trekmate host and a Universal film franchise. I'm not going to let you guess now. I'm just going to let you guess at the end of our talk about Strange New Worlds. And I'll let the listeners have a think about who the host might be and what the franchise was. And that's all I'll say for now. So I'll come back to that later if we remember.
If we remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You've intrigued me. So a former Trekmate host.
I'm saying nothing. Just a Trekmate host and a Universal film franchise. That's all I'm saying.
Colour me intrigued. Okay. We'll come back to that then.
But as Wayne was about to say, today we're going to be talking about Children of the Comet, which is episode 2 of Strange New Worlds.
We are indeed. So this is my second time watching it.
Same. Yeah.
And I have to say, my initial thoughts were, when I first watched this episode, it was clear from this point we were getting episodes that explored different members of the cast.
Yes. If you didn't know on the first episode, yeah, it's definitely clear on the second episode that they're giving everyone their due, which is great. That's how you should do it.
Absolutely.
And with this episode, the main character we get fleshed out is Uhura, which is especially nice because, you know, she's a special character to pretty much all Star Trek fans. And she didn't necessarily really get that back in the day. You know, just like some of the other characters from TOS, she's loved, like beloved, but she just didn't get that backstory. I mean, God, like, Uhura gets more in this one episode than Uhura got in like 3 seasons, pretty much.
Absolutely. It was about the main 3 on TOS. It was Spock, Kirk and McCoy, and everybody else were the supporting cast. You never really got to explore their characters too much. And I think they have been very faithful to the Uhura character and really fleshed her out in a way that makes you appreciate Uhura even more.
Mm-hmm. It's another one of those things where I'm going to enjoy TOS more now when I watch it. I will look at that character as well as the other characters in a different light.
Absolutely. I'd say I don't think I even mentioned this year, funnily enough, because whilst we was having our break, Nichelle Nichols actually
passed away,
didn't she?
It's not been mentioned on this show at all, yeah.
No, so Nichelle Nichols passed away. And like usual, I was contacted by a couple of the local BBC radio stations to talk about it. So I went on, spoke about her a bit.
Oh, I wish I'd known that.
Funnily enough, I had a look last week to see if I could find like the recordings, but it was just so long ago that they're no longer on there.
Oh, never mind.
So I was like, oh, okay. never mind, that doesn't matter. But yeah, no, so it's crazy that now we're at a point where her character is explored so much more, where like she takes parts of Nichelle's performances and like their like the portrayal of that character, mm-hmm. and really fleshes it out. Because like in Star Trek V, when she starts like dancing and singing and everything,
it's TOS as well. Yeah, I really think they do not borrow, but you know, they really use that. Again, it shows me a backstage crew of people that care, who love these characters and like bring the new versions to life.
And also, I think it also supported the sort of parts of the character from the JJ verse as well, because they really portrayed Uhura as this ultra talented linguist.
Yeah, it's the right way to go. Like, I think they borrowed a bit off Enterprise as well with Hoshi and stuff, but that's exactly what she should have always been. And maybe she was. Like, I just sometimes when I'm watching Strange New Worlds, I think to myself, like, is this what Gene Roddenberry intended? Is this what he wanted? But like, there's only so much time to get stories across, and like the TV stations really like that idea of it's about these three guys, don't worry about them so much. But did he have it mm-hmm. in his head that like, this is who Uhura is? I might not be getting to tell the story I want to tell, but that's who she is. I wonder that.
It'd be interesting to know that, because as you said, well, the thing is, back then TV was a lot simpler,
yeah,
in some ways. So they might not necessarily have fully fleshed out in their heads who each character was.
Mm.
But you would like to think that he had that sort of vision for Uhura.
I would, yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice.
Obviously, it was amazing to have like her being the first woman of colour,
mm-hmm.
like represented on TV in a major role. But it's just unfortunate, like Sulu, like Chekhov, like Scotty, that they just weren't really that fleshed out.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
So in this episode, we open up once again. I think we open up on the, yes, we do, showing a alien planet with a species that is very unfamiliar to us, and with the personal log from Uhura, where she's talking about the ship being in orbit of a planet that's they're studying, like an ancient comet and things like that. But she's actually not that busy, except for being invited to dinner at the captain's quarters.
That's a classic Star Trek episode intro, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And that's the thing, it's, I really do appreciate the personal log, because having that narrative really sets up the feel for the episode.
It really does. It's a very smart way of doing it, of, you know, it's Star Trek's version of Once Upon a Time, you know.
It is.
It's really well done. Like, I feel like, well, not feel like, I know that some of the newer series have totally missed out on that. Just straight into nonsense. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they didn't do personal logs, but not like that. Not like setting the tone, like, this is the planet, this is the beginning of the story, this is what this character is up to at the beginning of this story.
Well, with Discovery, it's like, here's some action, and some more action, and mm-hmm. more action. Don't ask us what else is going on, because none of it makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway.
So, anyway.
Yeah.
Not here to talk about that. And I appreciated the interaction between Ortegas,
yes,
and Uhura, because Ortegas had ribbed her by saying that it was a formal dress.
Yes, I did like that.
So, no, that's what she said. She said, you might want to dust off your dress uniform.
Yeah.
And Ortegas is just in jeans and t-shirt.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I don't think she's in this scene, but I can confirm from last week that the character, what, I can't remember how you were pronouncing it, but it's La'an. La'an.
La'an.
La'an.
La'an.
Yeah.
La'an.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I was saying it like Leon.
Yeah, I think you were.
Something like Leon. Yeah, Leon. But that's the thing, because we actually get to meet the characters a bit. We actually get to know how to pronounce their names correctly.
Yeah. And what their names are at all. And we get another character in this scene as well, who I instantly liked, and I've forgotten his name right now. You might have it on, not Wikipedia, but Memory Alpha in front of you. It's not you don't call them Andorian, do you, when they're like the albino Andorian? There's a different...
No, it's an Aenar.
Aenar, that's it.
Yeah, it's Commander Hemmer.
Hemmer.
H-E-M-M-E-R.
But yeah, it's like more jokes going on with that character as well, which I thought was good. Like, and actually seeing Spock and Hamar having a sense of humor and teasing Uhura, which was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exactly. Just because Uhura initially feels that she needs to help the blind man.
Yeah.
Do what he's doing, and he's like, "You're really insulting."
Yeah.
But also at the same time, they're ribbing her and she doesn't take none of their crap.
Yeah.
And that kind of endears herself to Hamar and Spock a lot. So.
And automatically she puts them in their place by speaking both of their languages, like saying like pack it in sort of thing. You're not as funny as you think you are, or something along those lines.
It was fun. It is funny.
This one scene, it's like it's about 4 minutes long, and just all the different interactions with Uhura and all the other characters in that room, like the captain, number one, two people we just said, like it just, you're told so much in such a short space of time about this character. You learn so much, and it's just, you kind of do think like, oh, why didn't she get that in TOS? But we know why, but it's nice to see that the character really deserves that, and it just makes you like the character more, I feel.
Absolutely. And also, once again, I think it really is nice to like see this sort of family within the crew, like the captain.
Yeah.
Promote.
It seems very believable, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It's one of the things of, like any company or ship, it starts at the top. So this is the sort of ship that Pike is running, where he likes to get to know the crew and invite them over for dinner. So he's a very, not what's the word, not approachable, but just...
I'd say that's correct. Makes himself that way, yeah.
Yeah, approachable captain.
Yeah, he's definitely fighting Captain Archer for that spot, I'd say, of nicest captain or most approachable or whatever.
Oh, definitely. He really is. And that's it, even with his little story of chasing the trouserless Norse.
Yeah.
That's where he realized that he wasn't cut out for security.
Yeah. I'm going to say, like, from this episode onwards, just out of interest, let's stay on Captain Pike hair watch. Because I'm not sure if each episode, like, his hair gets a bit bigger than it did the episode before. Like, it occurred to me a few more episodes in than this, like, is his hair getting bigger? Like, taller and taller? Like, he gels it up. Like, on the pilot, I swear it's only a couple of inches, like an inch and a half. But by this one, it's already about, like, 3 inches. He's like, he looks like Johnny Bravo or Vanilla Ice. I swear, like, I mean, it looks good and everything, but it's just like, wow, that's big.
Are we talking changes as drastic as Janeway?
Oh, God, no. Well, I don't know. Let's see. You're like 8 episodes in. I'm only 6. That would be amusing to see if he's got like kid and play style hair, like 1 foot in the air by the time we get to episode 12. Or...
Oh, dear. Excellent. Okay, let's start Pike hair watch.
Yeah. So let's keep an eye on that. We'll have to measure on the TV week by week. But in this scene, we find out that Uhura, she lost her whole family, and she reveals that by basically being asked by Pike, you know, why is she a cadet? Where does she see herself in 10 years? And it's interesting when he says 10 years, because he's sort of stumbling over that line because he knows what's coming in 10 years for him. So it's a weird line to say.
Yeah, it's the first time that he's posed that question after knowing what's going to be happening.
Yeah, it's a bit awkward for him. But then the awkwardness continues because she admits that she's not sure she will be in Starfleet in 10 years and basically says, like, the majority of her family was killed and that she kind of ran away from what she was going to be doing to join Starfleet to just, like, really immerse herself in something that she could concentrate on, and that's why she's there. So she's just being brutally honest. But, yeah, really fleshing out that character. And, yeah, like, even Number One and the Captain are, like, sort of saying, like, wow, that was honest after she left.
Yeah, and that's the thing. She was inspired to join Starfleet because her grandma was in Starfleet and she used to tell lots of good stories about being in Starfleet. So that was her only reason for running away to Starfleet. So she's like, I'm not sure if Starfleet's for me, but they were just playing it by ear. And I think Pike was like, well, you beat out a lot of people to be here. And Spock's like, thousands of people to be here, because on the flagship you only have the best of the best.
It's very interesting little fact. And then he walks down the hallway with her afterwards and just, he sort of says, like, look, if you don't want to be here, maybe you should leave, because there's a lot of people that do, so maybe you should consider stepping down. So she's got to think about that.
Well, that's the thing, Spock's even though he's not like first officer, he's still
pretty close.
Definitely does. Yeah, I think he still like takes on that kind of role sometimes. And
yeah,
he's obviously Uhura's done herself plenty of favors to win Spock's admiration. And Spock says, like, being a Vulcan, he admires like honesty.
Yeah, I love their interactions in this episode. Those two characters.
Absolutely, because that's she even says, like, I've always got in trouble for being too honest. Like, I hope I didn't like offend the captain. He's like, no, the captain appreciates honesty, and like we've done that in bucket loads. Also, in that scene, we just get one little nugget that's left that will be picked up later when she is helping prepare dinner. Or she was doing something. I think it was helping prepare dinner. And she was just humming. And Pike asked her what she was humming.
Yeah.
And it was like a nursery rhyme tune or something from
Kenya.
Africa. Yeah. From Kenya. So that lays the seed work. She says,
I totally forgot that.
She says, it's a bad habit. I hum when I'm concentrating or doing stuff. So.
Yeah.
So it lays that groundwork for things that come later on. And at that point, we find that the comet's trajectory has changed and is now heading directly for the planet.
Yeah.
Everyone brainstorms. The suggestion is to just add on some thrusters to a payload of torpedoes to center the rocket and just get its trajectory out of the way of the planet, because it's not directly it's not breaking the new prime directive, so they can actually help save this planet. And lo and behold, they fire the torpedoes and that comet's got a force field. So at that point we cut to the intro.
Wow, that's a lot, isn't it, before the intro?
It really is. They packed in a lot just in that first sequence. So there is a lot that goes on in this episode. So it cuts to the conference room and we have everyone throwing ideas. They're shitballing. What is shitballing? It's spitballing. The term is spitballing. But no, they're shitballing. What's going on? Because like there is, they've after scanning the comet, they found that there definitely is like structures on the comet, which is of itself very strange, and they have no idea what is going on. So they decide to send a away team down, and Uhura is going to be joining them, because if there is some civilization that they've never seen before, never heard from before, that like does like live or inhabit comets, then they're probably going to need a decent linguist down there, because there is currently no signs of life.
I like this story and where it's headed. And we've also got the return of Dave Samuel Kirk.
Yep, Dave is back.
And we also have Laan. We'll get used to saying that name, yeah.
Yeah, so Laan, Dave and Spock are joining her, who are on the away team.
It was quite amusing. It gets carried on in a minute when we're actually on the comet, but it's like a throwback to TOS with Nurse Chapel basically teasing and flirting with Spock a little before they go down, as she's giving them their booster shot thing. And then he gets teased about it when they get down there.
I really do like that they are leaning into the interactions that Spock and Nurse Chapel had.
Yes.
During TOS.
Yeah, I'm glad they've done that.
Because plenty of people were shipping Chapel and Spock for good reason as well. So it's nice to actually see that continuation, even though we know Spock is a taken man.
Yeah.
But it's nice.
For now.
Yeah, for now. But we it is nice to see those interactions. And they're fun. They're fun because Chapel comes across as a very intelligent, witty and funny person. I really like the woman that's playing Chapel.
She's done really well, yeah. They've done good things with that character in a very short time, and I'm sure they're going to do more. I'm sure it's probably about to happen after episode 6, which is as far as I got. Well, they were doing a bit with her on that,
mm-hmm.
where she's fed up on these dates that she's going on. But anyway, no, we're not talking about future episodes because we'll do them in 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks. Sorry.
No, I'm not going to spoil anything for you. You're going to have to experience it all yourself.
So they all go down and... Oh, yeah, my first thoughts when I saw them go down, like it wears away quite quickly. But the first thing I was thinking was like H.R. Giger and mm-hmm. Alien and Aliens and stuff like that from the movies. It really looked like that at first.
Mm-hmm.
Like a massive cavernous room, you know, weird looking walls, and then like a sort of big, huge egg in the middle of it. But then it soon turns into like typical Star Trek when Dave Samuel Kirk acts all red shirt and just like walks up and touches the egg and flies across the room. And he's fucked from that point.
Yeah, he's out. He no longer has a speaking role for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, he was lucky to get those few lines. He did not want to listen to Spock. Spock's like, don't do it. Don't do it. I'm telling you not to do it. Stop doing it. You're doing it. Why are you doing it? Oh, he's on the floor, basically.
It was the classic Nemo, don't touch the boat.
Yeah.
He's screwed. They try to beam him back, medical emergency. However, the shields have now gone back up on the comet.
Mm-hmm.
So the crew cannot beam out. And they perform, what was it? Like, we shock the heart back to...
Defibrillator.
Yeah, like they used their version of a defibrillator to get Dave at least pumping again.
Yeah, so they get that. So he's stable, as Spock says. But then back on the Enterprise, they're hailed by the chin aliens from Red Dwarf, the blue chin aliens. That's what it reminds me of for some reason. I don't know why that's so burnt in my brain, that Red Dwarf, but that's what I was thinking of for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, yeah, they say, don't touch it. You can't touch it. Don't care who, you know, what you've done already, but you need to go now because it's this ancient prophecy, like...
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to do what it's alive and it does what it wants. And
mm-hmm.
so then Pike is just like, okay, what do we do now?
Because that's the thing. Their ship is vastly bigger than the Enterprise. More guns.
Oh, it's massive. Yeah.
Yeah. More heavily armed. And they call themselves the Shepherds.
That's right.
The Shepherd of, I can't remember what they called a comet at the moment. But basically, they say that the comet is like its own sort of god. It's its own. It decides what happens. It can bring life. It can bring destruction.
Mm.
No one must like alter the course of.
I've got
this comet.
I've got a classic Star Trek question, which I wonder if other fans have asked.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't help think when I was watching this interaction between the bridge crew and the aliens, or the shepherds, we'll call them.
Mm-hmm.
When a captain or whoever is conducting the conversation on the view screen,
yeah.
When they turn around to face their crew and put their back to whoever's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Is someone or the computer itself automatically muting the call? Because that's been going on in Star Trek forever. Because they'll say all this stuff and they'll just like, oh, do this, do that, you know, like, and it's like, can't they hear
you? I can still hear you.
Yeah. I heard that.
Oh, shit, someone mute the call.
So, yeah, I wonder that, if that is supposed to be a thing. That's one of those things, what we are getting filled in those little gaps. Like you said last week with the transporter, and they said, oh, we got the clothes ready to go for you. Like, is that a thing where the computer just knows, like, okay, that's their back. We mute the call for this time until they turn around again. Because that's been happening for forever.
Oh, it really has. And the thing is as well, the one thing that I did wonder, it came up in my mind whilst was watching this, is why do captains not just have like a little hand signal, like playing baseball, like how the pitcher or whatever would like do some hand signals, which is just like mute the call for us.
Yeah.
Because you don't want them to necessarily hear. It's like, oh, okay, then, so you're protecting this. That's fine. 1 second. Find out how we can kill them.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
That must be it. The back to the screen. It must be able to read that somehow. But that's interpreted as mute.
You reckon that AI has just got to that point where it's like, okay, then he's faced away from the screen. Mute the call.
It's got to be, yeah. Because it's not even just the captain. Like, Ortega's is saying stuff as well.
You don't reckon it's like the communications officer just sitting there quickly pressing the mute button as soon as he turns around?
It could be. There could be someone at the back of the room. I also feel with Strange New Worlds, when we're on the bridge, and maybe I'm just talking about the more recent series, but when I'm seeing them do stuff on the panels, it seems a bit more believable than other Star Treks. When they're doing stuff and they're doing close-ups off the screens, like I kind of believe it a bit more, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely say with TOS, like, because they had less to work with, it really does seem sometimes, or some of the 90s ones, like people are just going mad with their fingers, going bloop, 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 bloop. You know, you could believe it when it was Data, yeah. But whenever it was anyone else, you're just thinking, like, what are you actually doing?
Exactly.
But on Strange New Worlds, they do some good close-ups of those panels, and you're seeing them go bloop, 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 and it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I could see how that would, especially, you know, we're in an age now where we've been using touch screens for ages now.
The only thing that I used to find with TNG, like with the L cars, is not only are they touching things really fast, but none of them had like any sort of writing on them that would decipher what is like what is going on. It's like there's no just easy keyboard for typing.
That's
stuff.
What I mean. Like, if it was Data doing it, you can kind of believe it. Because he's this ultra-intelligent android with all this information and knowledge. But, like, your average human crew member, it's like, what the hell are you doing on that thing? How can you remember that? In these intense situations as well.
I didn't take that in, but I'm going to pay more attention to the displays next time.
Yeah, yeah. The displays themselves seem more believable than any I've seen before. And then what the actors are doing with them actually seems a bit more real, I've felt.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more believable, I should say. Obviously not real. Like, we're not really going around in...
Are we not?
I don't know. Maybe we are. It's just in secret.
That's it.
Well, I hope that's the case.
I would like to think so, because let's face it, it'd be far more interesting.
Oh, God, yeah. So where were we? So they're being warned off, aren't they? And
they're being warned off by the shepherds to stay away from Mahanet, I think they called it.
Mm-hmm.
Mahanet? Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced, which is far more than a normal comet.
I know that eventually Ortega's comes up with the idea of some sort of like phaser vibration thing or something, but I don't know if that's later.
No, I think that was actually... before the shepherds
arrived. Oh, that was before. That was before this.
Yeah, yeah. Because it was at the point that they were about to fire that then they had a bunch of shots hit them from the bigger ship.
Yeah,
that was then warning them off of their special comet.
We kind of it goes back and forth between the episode now, between the bridge and then between the away crew, like, and it's Uhura which is ends up making the most progress here, like throughout this whole episode. You know, she's feeling really under pressure down there. She's making jokes, and Spock, you know, is sort of saying like, oh, is this the best way to go about it?
But also she's, you're also having that character development of her not feeling like she's adequate for the job to be there. Is she really the best person to be doing this? And Spock gives her the pep talk of...
A few pep talks.
He gives her a bunch of pep talks. And the one of, you are the best trained person to be doing your job on the Enterprise, and you are the only one here that can save us.
Yeah, it's weirdly emotional. It's a good interaction.
Yeah, it was. I can't remember it word for word, but he is pretty much like, you. In this situation, you are the only person that can save us. So rather, and also explain, like, when you face life and death situations, it can become like an out-of-body experience, but you need to concentrate, push through that, and realize that you are going to be the one to save us.
Yeah.
And Spock's once again proving to be a great commander.
He certainly is here, yeah.
Yeah, really enjoying those interactions. And also, I'm enjoying the fact that on the ship, Pike, when he's interacting with the Shepherds, it isn't just coming down to gunplay. He is actually trying negotiate with these people. It's a very diplomatic, like, interaction with him, and that's why, like, the Shepherds are like, oh, you say that you're a reasonable person, but, like, and then explaining their points of view on the comet and why it needs protecting, because that's what their civilization has been doing. It protects these life givers throughout the galaxy for as long as they can remember, which is an interesting concept.
Yeah, it is. It's very well done, all that stuff, where it's like, is anyone really the bad guy here? Because obviously we're seeing the Shepherds as the bad guys as Star Trek fans, but then the Shepherds are seeing Pike and everyone as being the bad guys. You know, like, leave it alone. This is our thing.
And also when he's speaking to the Shepherd about where he's like, you cannot desecrate Mahata, whatever it's called. by firing upon it, and then Ortega's under a breath is just like, well, I hope he doesn't realize about the landing party. a breath, and then he goes, you've already desecrated it by putting your people there, and she's like, oh, it's too late.
Yeah down there, I think on the comet, like, they're just trying to get off, aren't they? They just want to get off at that point, like.
Yeah, they're trying to get off, and it's at that point that Uhura is trying to figure out the language that is written all over this huge egg and all over the walls. She's trying to decipher the language, which at that point, the clue from earlier comes into play, where when she's concentrating, she starts humming this old Kenyan song, at which point the comet reacts to music. It starts lighting up and things going on, and also the Enterprise picks up signals emanating from the comet, which ends up translating to a mimicking of that tune that Uhura is doing.
That's right, yeah. And the captain recognizes it and realizes that Uhura is definitely up to something down there.
Exactly, because they have what's that app that when you let it listen to a song, it tells you what song it is.
I don't know. I know what you're talking about, but I don't know.
Yeah. Because the Enterprise has got an amazing version of that it can take like a few bars from a tune and straight away knew it was from the Kenyan folk song.
Yeah.
So, yeah, technology has improved significantly over the next 200 years.
But yeah, obviously once she's done that, she's really made progress and realized that all the stuff she's reading and writing down really didn't really matter, and this is how she's gonna communicate, I guess, or unlock the code, or however you want to say it.
Well, what it was in the writings which she was trying to decipher, she ends up finding that it ends up translating to musical notes. And
yeah,
because Spock can help her decipher that, once they know this, they can decipher what it is saying on there pretty easily, because they're like, music is like maths, it's universal.
Yep.
Like, the tones can be deciphered using maths. So they end up deciphering that, and Uhura figures out a tune that wants to be played to open up the golden egg.
Yeah.
And gets Spock to take part, which Ortega's is like, I do not have the singing voice for this.
You mean La'an?
Oh, La'an. Not Ortega's. Yeah. La'an.
It's all right.
La'an. La'an just like, no, I do not have the singing voice for this. You two take it away.
Yeah, it did make me laugh, that effect. Like, oh, we could all die, but I'm not singing. I'm not bloody singing.
There are some things worse than death, and letting you hear my singing voice is one of them.
I'm not publicly singing, yeah.
So,
but yeah, they do a good job. That's a nice scene as well, and mm-hmm. also that reminds me of TOS as well, when they're having a jam.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that's a bit of a precursor, isn't it?
For yeah.
Spock getting his harp out.
Yeah.
And Uhura singing away. Yeah, no, I suppose it is a bit of a precursor of things to come.
Yeah, I did like that.
At that point, by them singing this, humming this tune, singing this song, it manages to get the shields down of the comet, at least long enough for them to be the away team back. So the away team's back, and Dave
mm-hmm.
straight away taken to sick bay.
Yep.
And scene two. So they're back on the ship at this point.
Oh, you just reminded me of something as well.
What was that?
When they were in the conference room earlier on, and, you know, talking about life and death and saving this planet, like, Pike somehow finds the time to say, like, really like that mustache. And Dave's like, oh, you could grow one too if you want. I just thought that was amusing. In the middle of that particular meeting. There's people on that planet that are going to die. Oh, nice mustache.
Yeah, no, true. Oh, yeah. Dear. At this point, after beaming the ship, the crew back, the shepherds find that even more insulting that they've continued to desecrate the comet and
that's right.
start firing on the Enterprise. So we get, at this point, we get a nice little space battle.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, once again, unlike Discovery, it's a payoff. We see, like, you've enjoyed some, like, good Trek and some traditional Trek, so we get some, like, a little bit of a battle. And
it's justified. It's not just for the sake of it. It's not just that, hey, kids, look at this.
No, it's for a reason.
It's like, it's all happening for a reason. Yeah.
It's for a reason. They're actually defending, the sacred comet that they're protecting,
mm-hmm.
and at which point the Enterprise manages to successfully take down their weapons.
Yeah, they're just defending themselves, essentially.
They don't want to hurt them, they just want to disable their weapons and like maybe give themselves enough of a chance to actually sort something out with the comet without pissing them off royally.
Yeah.
At which point we don't get to see the full plan being hatched.
We don't get to see it at all. It's nice, actually. Like, I mean, it'd be cool if we did, but at the same time, it's a nice surprise. And I even forgot it the second time round as well. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot they did that.
So they get Ortega's to do some
maneuvers. She literally calls it the Ortega maneuver or something, and Pike's just like, oh, right, okay, you've already got that ready to go, have you?
Yeah, she's proving to be a bit of a Tom Paris.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's cool.
She's a hotshot flyer and mm-hmm. manages to take the Enterprise through the tail of the comet, which is a really cool scene, because what I enjoyed about this scene is like not only seeing the Enterprise do some nice maneuvers and whatnot, but seeing the deflector shields just bumping off.
That looked good, didn't it?
Comets.
That really looked good, because you you have to use your imagination in a lot of the series for that, but here you're actually seeing it inside and out now, and it's like, ah, yes. It will make all that falling about all over the ship make sense now.
Yeah, it does. And I think they've got their shaking down to a knack. It sometimes takes a crew a season or so before the shaking is down. At this point, then they get in front of the comet, all stop, turn the power off, make it look like they're stranded. And then, like, well, they hail the shepherds to ask them for help to take them out of the way. And they're like, why shouldn't we just destroy you? Well, if you destroy us, you're going to end up blowing up your comet. So the shepherds reluctantly accept to help the Enterprise, even though they're just playing dead. So they get him in the tractor beams to take him out. But at that point, it signals Spock in the shuttlecraft, who's just been kind of dropped off in the tail of the comet. So they've sneakily let a shuttlecraft with Spock go, because they've hatched a plan to help guide the comet away from the planet.
Very sneaky plan, yeah, but very good one.
Because I think here, what does he do? It basically, like, almost, I can't remember what they said. Something to do with heat. I just assumed it worked like a magnet.
Yeah, just heats up the shuttle pod thing and just, yeah, just like cracks it, doesn't he?
I assumed it's a bit like a gravitational pull type thing. Like, yeah, just like increase the gravitational pull of the shuttlecraft. So he then whips in front of the comet, because now that the shepherds are busy, they're not concentrating on what's going on with the comet.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives Spock an opportunity to guide the comet. And it does. It guides the comet away from the planet. And at that point, a chunk of the comet...
It splits, yeah.
Yeah, a chunk of the comet comes away, which leaves a trail of water vapor like going into the planet. So it's providing the planet with water.
I tell you what, this episode has been a good episode to this point, but at this point, I think this episode gets a lot deeper in it, mm-hmm. in its thinking, and I really like it from this point of view, because it sort of touches on something that, you know, call me a buffoon or whatever, that I believe in, where the whole theme, which has been going on the whole episode without us really realizing it, the whole theme of the episode becomes like, fate is a real thing, or fate could be a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as I always say myself, I believe in fate, but I believe you have to choose your paths. You can't just sit and wait for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You have to still go and make that thing happen, and you can make the right choice or make the wrong choice, take your lives down different roads. But I really like that. I really like that with this episode, which we'll talk about more of it in a second. But this is sort of like the, yeah, one bit which they'll say in a minute. Well, I'll say it now. So we find out that the exact way that Spock broke the comet had, when it was speaking to Uhura earlier on, was basically trying to tell them, like, I mean no harm. Like, anything that happens today, like, I mean no harm. Like, things are going to happen for a reason. And somehow they get an image on the Enterprise,
mm-hmm.
where this image matches exactly the part of the comet which is broken off by Spock, like, minutes before he actually did it.
Yeah.
And they're just like, how could it know that? But then it all comes back to, you know, the shepherd saying, like, this is what was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all just sort of scratching their heads going like, oh my God, like, did it really know that? And
yeah,
I guess it did.
It's one of those endings that leaves it open for interpretation, like, depending on whatever your belief structure is. But yeah,
But you've got all these different characters where it's like, Uhura is following her path, you know, like, mm-hmm. this is what her fate is, you know, like, she's had horrible stuff in the past, but it's led her to this point. She's just saved a whole bunch of people on her ship and on this planet and brought them new life. Well, they all have, but you know what I mean? But also it's the captain, where he's really worrying about this death that's coming to him in 10 years, and he knows all this information about how it happens, that he's going to save these kids.
Yeah.
That's how he's going to die.
Because number one turns around and says to him, like, it keeps trying to say about how things aren't set in stone. And he just reels off the names of the, because at the moment they're kids, but in the future they're going to be like young adults that he ends up saving. He's like, these are the people under my command that I'm going to save. And he knows all of their names. And he's very much like, no, like, this is my fate.
Yeah, but then she's like, well, yes, it is. You're seeing parts of it, but maybe you can change some of it. So I might have to take back what I was saying last week about I hope that doesn't happen and that he does, you know, suffer the fate we already know of. But it'd be interesting to see where it goes. I'll be, after seeing this episode and really analysing it a bit more, like, I think I'll be okay with whatever happens to Pike in the in his future. I won't poo on it now if he survives and doesn't get all melty.
I think if they do the groundwork for it, then we'll accept stuff.
I thought this was great. A really, really good ending.
I honestly do think that we eventually get the pipe being face melted at some point.
Yeah.
Like right at the end. Right at the end. That's if Strange New Worlds manages to see enough seasons to get to that point.
Yeah, we'll see, won't we?
That is pretty much this episode wrapped up, I think.
Yeah, another great episode, I'd say.
That's it for me. I would say like this episode is like a solid 8 out of 10 like sort of episode. It's
That's fair.
It's a good one for building your characters. Yeah, it's an enjoyable episode. It's very Trek.
It is very, very Star Trek. Yeah, in a good way. Very good way.
And we get to know a lot more about Uhura and what she's been through, what she's capable of.
What would you say, 5 or 6, 7 main characters? Like, we've learned a little bit about all of them, a little bit more, but a lot more about Uhura, which is great.
Well, we've got the nurse, we've got Chapel and the doctor, and we've got our new
doctor wasn't in this one, I don't think, was he? But
no, he was.
Oh, you're just counting main cast members.
Yeah, main cast members. We also have like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like sort of bridge crew. Plus, we also even get to know a little bit about the chief of transport, like the.
Is it Kyle?
Yeah, the chief Kyle. Like he's becoming like a bit of like a regular, like O'Brien.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, we're probably talking about 11 or 12 people, I think.
And they're all likable, believable. We're remembering their names one by one. Like, we're learning their stories. I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a really solid, enjoyable episode. Once again, does well on a rewatch.
Very good. Very, very good. Big thumbs up.
Once again, just the Trek humor is in there.
It really is.
Alongside the gravity of like whatever's going on and the seriousness and everything else, it's got that right level of, it's not just all action for no reason. That little fight sequence we get, that is deserved. It's paid off for by like all of the building up to that point.
Yeah, well done to everyone involved on this one. Really well done.
It really is a solid, solid episode. And I enjoyed it, and it will definitely, it won't be a skipping episode on a rewatch in future.
Yeah, happy to say. I remembered what I'd said at the beginning of the episode. I'm going to have to go shortly, just because of stuff, but I said about, you know...
Your dream.
My dream. I had a dream that featured a Trekmate host and a Universal movie franchise.
Give us a teaser, what was it?
I'll just tell you what it was.
Yeah.
I just presume that you and everyone at home is thinking like, well, it's obviously you or Wayne.
I would have said Matt.
And it's obviously Back to the Bloody Future. But no, it's Matt, yeah.
Oh, really? It was Matt. Excellent.
It is Matt, but it's not Back to the Future. It's not Back to the Future.
Jaws.
I'll just set it up this way. I went to America recently, went to Los Angeles, so I knew I was going to Universal. So as well as watching Back to the Future for the millionth time, I was watching some of the other films, getting excited for going there because, you know, you have all these different rides and whatnot. So, yes, one of the films, you just said it, was Jaws, where I enjoyed watching the Jaws movies, especially the first one. But while I was in America and I was, we were sleeping in different hotels while we were there.
Yeah.
Like, I'd obviously been thinking about Jaws more than I should. And the thing is, also, like, I do have, thanks to that film, watching that film as a kid, I have a very healthy respect and fear of sharks.
Yeah.
You know, because they're definitely bloody there, especially where I was. There's a hell of a lot of them in Los Angeles.
Don't go in the water.
I didn't. I went right next to it. I stood right next to the water, but I didn't even touch it, other than my shoe. Maybe going like half a centimeter in.
That's close enough.
That was close enough, yeah. But one night I was dreaming, and it was, yeah, sorry about this, Matt, in advance if you are listening. Like, me and a bunch of unknown friends in my dream. I didn't know who they were. The only other person I recognized was Matt Warwick. And we were all like by the sea, like on some sort of quay or docks or something. And we had like all had canoes. And basically everyone was doing something what I did in canoes when I went to secondary school, and they would take you on these trips where they'd get you to walk on top of the other people's canoes, and you had to do that to like get off to the side.
Yeah.
And in the dream I was saying, guys, this isn't a good idea. Like, I don't like this. We shouldn't be doing this. It's dangerous. And when it was Matt's turn, Matt was walking along the canoes, and then he just sort of like fell into the water bum first.
Yeah.
And then Jaws just came up with his big open mouth. And I don't know if you've seen, have you seen all the Jaws movies?
I can't tell you if I've seen all of them. I've seen Jaws and Jaws the Return.
Yeah, there's three of them. I think the Return is four, but they don't call it four, I think. But like, the first one is great, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Second one, a lot of people don't like. I still enjoy it. It's clearly just reliving the first film. Mm-hmm. The third one is supposed to be really bad, and I missed that one recently because it wasn't on any of the apps that I've got. But Jaws 4 has got Michael Caine in it, and they probably spent most of their money on him. For what reason, I don't know, because we've not got Brody in it anymore, like the main character from the first two films. But the shark in the fourth film looks so bloody awful. Like, because I think they're probably still using the ones from the first film, but like, they're like 16 years old at this point, and like all the rubber's deteriorated, and like, so literally it's just someone moving that thing in the water, and like every death in that film of a human, like every human is just falling into that thing's bloody mouth. Like, there's no like real struggle. Like, there's no good animatronics or puppeteering going on. It's just everyone is just like, oh no, I'm falling into Jaws' mouth, you know. So I obviously already had that on my mind. So in this dream, like, yeah, Matt gets eaten by Jaws, but it's not even the good Jaws. It's Jaws for the Jaws. Return. Yeah. So he just falls into Jaws' mouth. And, you know, like, they just both go under. And even though, like, it looked bad because I obviously had come from that film, I was so upset. I was just like, Matt, no, you know. But, like, yeah. I'm so scared of sharks that, sorry, Matt, I didn't dive in to try and, you know, kill Jaws and rescue him. I was too scared.
What kind of friend are you?
Sorry, Matt. maybe I did afterward. Maybe I would have done if the dream had gone on any longer. You know, I'll say that I would have done. But I woke up at that point, and I was just so honestly upset. I had to do a thing that I do when I have nightmares. Usually my nightmares can be a lot more horrible than that one. I mean, this one's quite comedic, far from Matt's death. Sorry. But yeah, I had to get... I was genuinely upset. And it was one of those things where I was having to say, it's not real. It's not real. You know, it's just because you've been watching these stupid movies. But yeah, I felt so bad about it. But I thought, like, I'll have to tell Wayne about that, and he'll have a chuckle.
not bad enough to WhatsApp Matt to check that he was okay.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. You're not in the water, are you? Please say you're not in the water! Get away from the water!
No swimming in the next week, Matt, please.
Yeah, I think he'll probably be all right in the West Midlands, wherever he is these days.
Down the community swimming pool, he should be okay.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right, yeah.
See, well, at least it you cared enough that it affected you, mate.
It really did. It really did, honestly.
Oh, poor Jude and poor Matt.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure if I had those dream powers to go back into a dream, I would have gone under there with like a big spear gun or whatever.
At least we know Matt is safe.
Yeah, well, I hope he is.
He's safe. He's just over talking board games on Todcast. So, but that's it. Yeah, that's it for this episode. I've enjoyed talking about Strange New Worlds again.
Same here. Yeah, really enjoyed the viewing and really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm looking forward to going over it again and discussing it again. And like, hopefully, we'll continue this role. We'll be back again next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Sounds good to me. So thank you very much for listening, everyone. I've been Wayne Emery.
I've been Jude Hawkins.
And my name is Matt Warwick, and I can confirm that I haven't been eaten by Jaws, and I promise I won't go in the water.
I am Captain Jean-Luc Picard, and I approve this message. Tweet us at Trekmate1701. Make it so.